Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here tonight with Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David. How are you doing tonight?
Good. I'm always a little happier when the Oilers win. But that was a particularly satisfying road win. It's a team that historically you go into that building, and I know they've done well recently, but usually they got thwarted and stomped. Of course, the Wild were missing Matt Dumba and Mikko Koivu, which is a huge loss to that team, and they're two of their best players. And we saw what the Oilers happened to the Oilers when Oscar Klefbom was out, Bruce.
But we sure did.
Nonetheless, I thought it was a strong victory. I mean, the Oilers won 4-1. They were outchanced in grade A chances, but only just though. It was 7-8 on grade A chances.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the Oilers scored on a grade B chance right off the top of the game, Nurse's goal. And I think that they had looked shaky, not at the start of the game, Bruce. I'm always looking like, are they making their passes? And they weren't. Like, there was one, Larson passed it over to Klefbom and hit him in the skate, and they had to retreat back into their own end. Like, there was all these kind of wonky, nervous missed passes at the start of the game. Then Nurse scored, and suddenly the Oilers were settled. They were just, it was like they got a shot of injection of confidence and hope from that shot. And from there, they played a really solid game, I thought.
Well, wasn't that goal just like the kind of goal the Oilers have given up in the first 3 to 5 minutes of way too many games these last couple of years? You know, or nothing much seemed to be happening. All of a sudden, there's a shot from well out, and it finds a corner, and you're looking at down the barrel of a deficit. And yet, here was the first time in 7 games that the Oilers scored first. It was the last time they got the first goal in the game, also coincidentally being the last time they won a game. And I don't think it's that much of a coincidence that they, instead of chasing the damn game, you know, they were out in front from the early going, and they just stayed in front. So
this is why every coach who's ever lived in minor hockey is, and in pro hockey, I'm sure the same thing, say two things: put the puck on net and go to the net. Mm-hmm. And this was plan A, put the puck on net. And sometimes it works. And you're right, Bruce, how many, like, we've probably seen that play 5-1 against the Oilers. The Oilers have gotten one like that for every 5 the opposition have gotten the last 2 years. So, you know, it maybe it'll balance out in these last, whatever it is, 20-something games of the year. Mm-hmm. And make the playoffs. Bruce, 2 points back. The Oilers are now 2 points back. So this is our Two Good Things, Two Bad Things, and Two Numbers podcast. What's your good thing, Bruce?
Well, out of a lot of good things, so I thought this was an extremely hardworking, effective, patient, grinding game from the Oilers. But I'm going to pick out from their excellent special teams, both special teams, but that one penalty kill in the second period when the puck was in their end. Like, it wasn't like the second kill was like a standard excellent kill where they cleared the zone 4 or 5 times and Minnesota couldn't get set up. Well, in the first one, the puck was along the boards in the Edmonton zone, 4 men against 5, grinding, and Minnesota could never get the puck out. It was Chiasson, Nugent Hopkins, Larson, and Klefbom, and they just won battle after battle, or at least sawed off and just froze the puck against the boards. Like, it wasn't glamorous hockey, even in its tiniest bit, but it was hard-working, blue-collar hockey, of which the Oilers tonight reminded me more of the 16-17 Oilers than they have for quite a long time. They finally did get one clear on that, but only went in the neutral zone. It was the second period, so they only were able to change Chiasson out for Draisaitl, but he came out with fresh legs, and he won a puck battle and got it out to Nuge, and Nuge was able to clear the zone and for a second time. And it was such a good penalty kill. My wife came in during the intermission. I said, you just got to watch this. And we sat down and we watched the whole 2 minutes of nothing. And it was a joy to watch because it was just good old-fashioned work ethic. And with a reward at the end of the kill penalty, and the guy comes out of the box and the puck isn't in the damn net.
I had the same thought about this. Reminded me of that team. Maybe it was the Cassian hit. You know, that team of 16-17, almost every game there was one really big hit. by either Cassian Maroon or Lucic. And that sure went missing last year. And we haven't seen it enough this year, but that hit Cassian put on Parise was a whopper. I had the same thought. And remember heading into the year, McClellan said, this year we'll find out if we were the team of 16-17 or the team of 17-18. Mm-hmm. And we have our answer. But maybe, fingers crossed, it's not too late, Bruce. Maybe hope springs eternal in the heart of
They had to win this game.
They did.
Like, they've been hanging around with losses and loser points too long. But Minnesota is one of the teams that they can catch, and they couldn't possibly let them get further ahead. They needed to win it, and ideally they needed to win it in regulation. And they got her done. So,
you know what? Klefbom was a key part of that kill, Bruce. And, man, did he ever play well tonight? He just had such a spectacular is wrong. Such a solid game. Mm-hmm. And what I noticed again and again, and this is what's been missing, I Caleb Jones provided to some extent, but he wasn't solid enough on defense in a top pairing role. But there's loose pucks in the Oilers' zone, and all of a sudden, Klefbom pounces on them, mm-hmm. and he passes the puck out of mm-hmm. the Oilers' end. He probably did it four or five times tonight. And this is what the Oilers sorely lack, is players with that ability to do that. This quick response, quick pass, smart play out of the zone. And, he's not on the power play. That's fine. Nurse has been doing as good a job probably as Klefbom ever did there. But he just suddenly, when he's in that top pairing with Larson, the Oilers actually have a functional top pairing that can kind of get the job done or get the job done. And every other defenseman in is a role that he can handle on the Oilers. Nurse and Russell aren't asked to do too much. Darnell Nurse isn't asked to do too much at even strength. And you can have the bottom pairing guys in the bottom pairing and struggling to get along as those two players do right now and probably will for the foreseeable future. But Benning's not asked, or Manning is, or Gravel isn't asked to play in the top four, or Caleb Jones. It's just everything works so much better. And it's heading into the season, this is my thought, they just couldn't afford to lose Klefbom. And certainly when they lost Klefbom and Russell at the same time, that was absolutely mm-hmm. devastating to the team. So, man, if those four defensemen, Bruce, can stay healthy, and obviously McDavid and Draisaitl, that's the key to the year. The Oilers have a chance.
Sekera, don't forget about him.
I have forgotten about him, Bruce.
I know you have, and I haven't. I still think he could come back and really power the third pairing. I mean, ideally, that's where he goes.
I might watch those Bakersfield games coming up, see how he looks down there to get a better sense of it, because mm-hmm. some people have said that the first injury he got takes about a year to 2 years to come back for. So he's on track to coming back from that. Was it the same leg, do you know?
Now, that I don't know, but I do know that last year he was severely hampered by a knee brace that he was wearing that limited his mobility, his pivot, all that kind of stuff. And you could see his confidence kind of seep away and everything went wrong for the guy. And the brace is gone. The head is still there. And, like the player. I like the smarts. And I'm hoping. I mean, obviously there's no way to know until we actually see him in games again. But I'm just saying, don't forget about him. He's kind of a secret weapon in the development stage again now.
Fair enough. I wrote off Sheldon Surrey too quickly in 2009-10, and mm-hmm. he came back and had a couple solid NHL seasons. There's maybe Sekera will do the same thing. I would like to, and we're going to get into this, I do think that if it's not Sekera, it needs to be Caleb Jones, because this third pairing is not going to, it's not good enough. My good thing, though, is the third line, which was Brad Malone, mm-hmm. not Greg Malone or any other Joe Malone or any of the other Malones. It was Brad Malone, Jujhar Khaira, and Zach Cassian. And I think that was another reason that we kind of had that 2016-17 flavors. You had this kind of contribution from another line other than the big line, and they were really checking well. And I don't know if they created anything much on the attack. In fact, I don't think they did. But I just thought they had a solid game on there. Khaira had one grade B chance. Mm-hmm. But they just had a really solid physical game and played strong hockey. And, man, would that ever be a great thing if the Oilers could actually create an actual identity line. And their identity was hardworking, checking, effective shutdown play, because Kyle Brodziak, I know he finally got, he was benched once earlier this year. Bruce, he shouldn't be getting back in the lineup. He's negative 12, I think, the worst plus minus on the team. He's earned most of those minuses. He can't keep up in the NHL anymore. He is a big part of the reason that they're losing consistently. They should not play him. They should send him to the minors and either go with Malone, see how long that works, or go with Joe Gambardella, who's played center, I think, in college wing, or Cooper Marody or someone else, because Brodziak is not an NHL player anymore.
100% he won't be playing next game. No. I don't think they're going to change a thing.
Or Cave. Cave actually looked decent.
He was all right.
Yeah, he was.
He was all right.
He had a scoring chance in the first period, and I shot on net, went after winning a faceoff, got a rebound shot. So when your time's up, it's up, and you just can't keep up anymore. So my bad thing is another player who I think needs to be set down, and I think actually might be if Sekera needs to be recalled. I can't remember. Was it Maddie who was writing this, wrote a tweet about this maybe? I can't remember who wrote this, but someone was suggesting Petrovic and Manning might be sent down to get the cap space. And Manning had three major mistakes on grade A scoring chances against tonight. He's not getting it done. He has played a little bit better, but which is not saying much, because he was at Colton Tubert like levels of ineptitude in his first few games with the Oilers. You laugh. We weren't laughing.
Colton Tubert levels of ineptitude, yes.
And
it's a funny turn of phrase. It actually kind of chills my blood, but it's a funny turn of phrase.
Well, we're seeing with Brodziak, Eric Bélanger levels of ineptitude. Brandon Manning, just send him. Like, Caleb Jones can hold his own, I think, on a third pairing. He was overmatched in the top four, but in the third pairing, the guy can move the puck. He might even help Benning look better. I just think they really need to make that move, and the sooner they make it, the better. Jones has had a full year in the NHL. He's had like another half year in total. I think he's, I don't know, overripe, but he's ripe. Bring him up. That's what I would do. So my bad thing was Manning, and my good thing will be when they send him to the minors and bring up.
Manning did make one key play on the first or the second Oilers goal when he disrupted a rush through the neutral zone, and it wound up Nuge and Ratty going back the other way.
That was
and nice scoring, and then he didn't touch the puck, but his step up, I think, is what keyed the turnover in the proper direction. So credit where due for that. But as you say, three mistakes on scoring chances against in 14 minutes is a couple more than you'd like to see.
Indeed. What is your bad thing?
I'm struggling with this tonight, you know, because I thought the whole team played good. Every player, I'm doing the grades tonight, and every single player is getting a passing grade. No problem. It was a real team effort, and I really thought everybody made their ice time count. There was nobody taking shortcuts out there. If I got a minor beef, and I'm not even sure that it's how wrong it is, but it seems like a waste to see Jesse Puljujärvi playing single-digit minutes on the fourth line. And I thought he was actually pretty good tonight. You know, he was defensively, he was, I thought, strong. He collapsed down to the front of the net and helped out in some of the pitched battles that took place anywhere near the net. And also okay on the offensive zone, just, you know, using his big body and getting into a good place and but nothing spectacular, and whatever spectacular he had in his game has gone walkabout. Like, when was the last time you saw Jesse dangle a guy one-on-one or erupt up the middle of the ice with speed and the puck on a stick and look dangerous, you know? And it's just, they're regimenting his game, and I'm not sure his game is regimentable.
I don't see him as this wild player out there. I mean, I think he kind of plays his position in the defensive zone. He can
He's have a grinder now.
He plays his position in the defensive zone. He just needs more confidence with the puck. Mm-hmm. He needs to be encouraged to take some chances and make some plays. And I'm not sure if he's getting that. And maybe that's, maybe they just don't think that's appropriate for where he's at. But yeah, I don't know. I don't like it either. It's ongoing. You know, why have him? You could have Patrick Russell doing the same grinding work. And
pretty much
down to the farm. If that's all you're going to have, like, I'd like to see again, you know, if they hadn't traded Strome, they could play that Kara Nugent Hopkins Puljujarvi line, which was that really strong, I thought, in the games they played. But they got up to the Kara at center because they traded Strome, and they don't have anyone else. Brodziak can't do it. Cave can't do it. He can't send a third line. He might be a fourth line center. Malone might be a fourth line center or whatever he is.
Tonight, both Malone and Cave played center and Kara played wing, but I'm not sure that that's a long-term path to success.
They did that. So I guess they could try to go with a line with Malone, you know, but Kara is such, he's the best player on that line, on the third line. So if you were to take him and put him with Nugent Hopkins, and Milan Lucic actually played fairly well tonight, I thought.
I like this game.
He's looked okay he's looked better in the last month. He's starting to move more and play a little bit better.
He's making more positive plays. He's still going to make mistakes. And if you focus on just the mistakes, he'll drive you nuts. But he's also making more and more positive plays for, you know, good passes and, you know, marauding in there on the forecheck and going where angels fear to tread and causing, you know, pucks to become loose or defensemen to suddenly brown their hockey pants, you know, and he's playing more to his strengths. And that's all you can hope for, really.
Yeah. So I don't know what the line should be, but I'd like to see Puljujärvi at least on the third line. And I think he has
a good top nine,
I think he's looked good with Kara and Nugent Hopkins in the past. So either one of those players, especially Kara, they seems to work well with him. So I don't know. I don't know why they don't go with that. My number is 2.
Mm-hmm.
The grade A scoring chance shots of Ty Ratty.
Good call.
I'm really glad. Hitchcock never seemed, he did not seem at all sold on this player. He's finally playing where he should be playing.
He had a real strong game tonight.
Oh, he's a good player. He's not a great player, obviously, but he's a good little fill-in player. He's got some skill. He can keep the play alive with McDavid. He fits well with McDavid. Mm-hmm. He can keep up with McDavid, unlike Chiasson, who can't. That never worked, Chiasson with McDavid. And Chiasson hardly scored. He stopped scoring when he was on that top line. He just couldn't keep up. Ty Ratty can keep up. And I like, you know, if you're going to, I think the formula for the Oilers on the top line is McDavid and Ratty and either Nugent Hopkins or Drysdale. And I'm okay with either one at this point, whatever, who has, you know, obviously Drysdale's having a hell of an offensive season. But I really liked Ty Ratty's game tonight, and I've liked it all year. And I think if they stick with him, he's going to regularly. He's got 4 now. I think he'd get at least 4 more on the regular for the rest of the year, maybe double that. Like, I think he could go on a little bit of a run scoring some goals here. So,
well, that's at least, I'd say, 4 games in a row that Ratty's been in eyeball to eyeball on the goalie at one point during the game. He scored against the Flyers like that. He scored tonight, but on a different play. But the play I absolutely loved came with about 3 or 4 minutes left in the game when Dreisaitl lobbed this long bomb up the center of the ice and Ratty cut in front of the defenseman like a wide receiver playing against the cornerback. He anticipated, he cut in front, he leaped, pulled the puck out of the air and used his momentum to duck right around the guy. And Dubnyk made a tremendous save. That would have been a beautiful goal, but with the tremendous save, it was, you know, in a sense, an even more beautiful play that all 3 of the primary players in it made. I love the lob pass. I've loved it since Paul Coffey. And it's becoming more and more a weapon. But if you have a guy that can actually play the puck with his glove, like take it out of the air under control and control it to himself, that makes it that much more dangerous that you don't have to hope that the puck comes down and bounces favorably. And Ratty couldn't have played that any better other than, I guess he could have made the perfect shot and put it in the net. But that was an inspired little piece of action.
Magic Johnson to Michael Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
All right. What's your number?
Yeah. My number is I think I'll go with 69%. And this was the percentage of shot attempts taken by the Wild in this game at five on five. They had 61 shot attempts. The Oilers only had 27. And you could look at that and you could say, well, Minnesota absolutely dominated this game. Like, they had what they call possession, which is the short form for shot attempts. But you know what? I think in this game, you could do a step back and do a measurement of zone time possession and come up with a very different figure than 31% for the Oilers. The Oilers were very patient in the offensive zone. They had a number of shifts where they held the puck in the zone for 45 seconds or more, even facilitating a line change during the shift on more than one occasion. And they didn't always even get a shot out of it. But they kept the puck along the boards, around the perimeter, pounding it, not giving it away, not forcing passes into the middle, not forcing shots from bad angles. And so as a result, they only had 27 shot attempts, but they had a way higher percentage of their shot attempts that were actually shots on net. And then, of course, they had a way better shooting percentage in the game. And, you know, I'm posting in the game grades a heat map from Natural Stat Trick that shows where the shots came from. And the Oilers are, like, entirely constrained within the dots. And Minnesota is, like, all around the boards, everywhere. They're shooting from everywhere.
And Corsi's kind of, honestly, it's an archaic stat.
Some games it means more than others. Tonight it meant very little.
When they didn't have what mm-hmm. Natural Stat Trick has, which is actual scoring chance shots on net. So the whole idea of Corsi was, Corsi's going to correlate to zone time.
Right.
Zone time is going to correlate to scoring chances. And scoring chances will eventually balance out and equal goals. So the whole idea, though, was to get to scoring chances, because the stats guys didn't have scoring chance numbers at that time. But now they do. I mean, Natural Stat Trick has them for every game. I don't know why they're still talking about Corsi, because you don't have to worry about what correlates to what. You can just go to the scoring chances and see who had the scoring chances that game. You don't have to worry about who had shots from the outside. There's been this kind of buildup, like this whole argument around, well, we got to care about zone time. But really, the whole idea from the start was to figure out who's got the scoring chances and who doesn't have the scoring chances. Mm-hmm. We have that data now. So
you do it directly by eye, and you had them at 8-7, which is a long way from 69% to 31.
Yeah.
Mind you, the stats I cited were even strength, whereas tonight the Oilers dominated on special teams. Both special teams had a very good game.
So anyway, I just think the thing to focus on is scoring chances. That's what is really important in hockey. And, you know, if you're looking for something, like, I mean, goals are obviously the most important thing.
But I'm a goals guy.
I know. And so am I. I think that's why we're doing this podcast, Bruce, because we came into this debate from a different place than almost anybody else. And that was with a desire to study the goals for and against and figure out what's going on. And then, you know, I was persuaded, and that, you know, you've always been more open to all of the stats, but I was persuaded that scoring chances really are something to look at. And I do think that fundamental insight of the analytics group, that scoring chances is the most important thing other than goals, is a crucial one, very important. And that's why I've done this work. But I'm not much on shots at net. I don't care about missed shots and zone time. I just want to know who's getting those dangerous chances in a game. And the Oilers, you know, Minnesota had more than the Oilers did, but a couple of them came right at the end of the game when they're pressing right at the end for a goal. Other than that, the Oilers had a slight edge. So good for the Oilers. I think they outplayed the Wild most.
Yeah, I do too. And I'm bringing up the Corsi just to highlight the fact that it doesn't always tell the tale. And tonight it most certainly did not.
Yeah. Alrighty, Bruce, I want to remind people who are listening to the podcast before we sign off tonight, if you're listening on iTunes, give us a review and give us a rating, especially if you're going to give us a good rating. You can avoid giving us a rating if you're going to give us a bad rating. But I think anyone who's actually listened to this point of the podcast is probably, this is for the faithful, and I think you're one of the faithful if you listen this far. So it apparently helps get more people to listen to the podcast, which is important so we can keep doing the podcast. So give us a rating. make a comment.
Appreciate the comments coming in on YouTube too. Oftentimes we've got more comments there than we do in our actual posts. And so it's fun to get that extra feedback.
Sure. I guess it must be that we look better than we sound, Bruce.
I think it's maybe just more accessible. You don't need the Facebook commenting system for YouTube, so anybody can chip in there. So
I'm still going with it. We look better than we sound.
Well, goes obviously. Without saying.
Yeah. All righty. Thanks for talking, Bruce.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.